It's Monday, October 16th, 2006, and you're listening to episode 23 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing game and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 59 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
And I'm Rocky.
And we'll explain that one in a second, but working around from the left, I have Adam.
Hi.
Dawn.
Hello.
And Chad.
Howdy.
Now, last night, a bunch of us, the four of us sitting here, plus significant others and friends and things like that, went to a new place out by where they live, because I live kind of north and west where everyone else lives.
Back out in civilization.
Yeah.
And they have power.
Yes.
All right, yeah. Right here, we are running purely on corn ethanol hatred. Generators, septic gases, and hatred.
Especially hatred.
But we went to a new restaurant down there. It's a combination sushi and hibachi place. Mm-hmm. They have like a sushi bar on one side, and then I guess three quarters of the restaurant is taken up by the little hibachi tables. And if you don't know what hibachi is, that's those restaurants where they have like the big metal,
like griddles, and the people sit around them, and then you got the Japanese chef spinning like the knives around, and then they're flipping stuff in the plates and doing jokes and fire. There's lots of fire.
Right. Lots of fire.
Yeah. If you've never been, you should go.
It's an experience.
Yeah.
So I was sitting on one side of the hibachi table next to Renaissance Wolf from our forums. We were both drinking hot sake, and the chef comes out to start cooking our stuff and says, "Oh, you like sake?" I'm like, "Okay, yeah, sure." He's like, "Well, this is hot sake. Cold sake's better. I have lots of cold sake." And held up this, what looked like a transparent, like an old cylindrical ketchup bottle.
Yeah.
Like
you'd see, like, he has several of those that he has his different sauces in, that he sprays on, and then he lights on fire on some of that stuff.
All the typical hibachi shtick. Mm-hmm. And he says that this is filled with cold sake. And at some point throughout the cooking, challenges Renaissance Wolf to open his mouth, and at which point he begins spraying a stream of this stuff into his mouth, which he kept saying it was cold sake, and I thought he was joking. I figured this is just water. It's just a stupid little shtick they're playing to see, you know.
Oh, no. It was good sake.
And so he'd spray it into the mouth and see how much you could hold up, you know, fill up with it, and he'd start counting off, and I think Renwolf made it to 15 or 18 or something like that, and I kept thinking it was water. Until he came around to me and sprays the stuff, and of course, first thing, nails me right in the eye. Does not even start at the mouth. Nails me square in the right eye. And let me tell you, if you have never had sake in your eye,
it's only true connoisseurs spray that stuff right in their
eye.
It's
about the same as having, say, lemon juice or carbolic acid sprayed in your eye.
You can laugh about it now.
But so he sprays the stuff in my mouth. A lot of it. I mean, a huge amount of it.
It was good, though, wasn't it?
It was all right, but man, I tell you, I got this after I swallowed it. Within about 15 minutes, I just had the most ridiculous splitting headache.
Really?
And I normally don't get that from alcohol.
What a lightweight.
I normally don't get this from alcohol. You know, there's that belligerent White Castle night.
Drunk to hangover in 15 seconds.
Belligerent White Castle night.
Oh, my God. That was awesome. 60 White Castles and a lot of anger.
It was not anger, it was just belligerence.
Yeah.
There is a difference between the two.
Well, to bore people with our White Castle story, right. Let's move on.
Let's bore people with something else.
Yes.
So, Chad, do you want to put another quick plug for the Fear the Boot World of Warcraft Guild?
We're running the World of Warcraft Guild on Black Hand, the Black Hand server, Alliance Sides, PvE server, and we're having a lot of fun. We're slowly growing. We've got a vent server, website, all that usual guild stuff, and we're having a lot of fun. And
we're not a huge guild, but we are a very active guild.
Yes.
There's a lot of people on, a lot of stuff going on. So if you're into World of Warcraft, you know, stop by and say hi, or if you wanted to pick up the game, here's a guarantee you can hop into a friendly crowd. I mean,
yeah.
And then also, if you want to know more, you can hop on our forums at feartheboot.com. We have a whole thread that's dedicated to the World of Warcraft Guild, or whole topic area.
Yep.
So,
yeah, if you want to jump on the game, again, that's World of Warcraft, Black Hand server, Alliance side. It's a central time zone server. Do a /who, /fear/boot, fear the boot. And anybody who's on, get in contact with them, and they will hook you up with somebody who can get you in the guild.
You know, this episode, compared to most of the ones we do, we don't have a huge amount of lead up to our topic, because I think this topic is so
fun.
Multifarious.
Mm-hmm. Multifarious?
Multifarious.
See, fun is only three letters.
Yes, that is a real word. This is probably going to take us for a little bit. And our topic for today, we talk a lot on this show about kind of the do's and don'ts of gaming. Mm-hmm. And some of this is pretty absolute right and wrong. Some of this is just our take on gaming.
Some of it's just outright BS.
Yeah, some of it's just outright BS. But we talk a lot about what kind of what to do. Today we're going to talk about horribly what not to do. Mm-hmm. We have a whole list of topics up there on the big board that are all about one thing only, bad game mastering.
That's right.
Oh, my God. We could go on all night.
We could, but we're only going to go on for about an hour.
And on the hour car ride home.
Let's start off with a little bit of an introductory topic. And, Chad, way back when we first started the podcast, we were brainstorming topics. This is one of the ones you threw out that we just haven't gotten to until now. What kind of person even wants to be a GM? Because if you think about it, the game master has to subject themselves to a lot of scrutiny.
Yeah.
They are the first person blamed when the game goes bad, usually.
That's right, yes.
They have to do a huge amount of work, a lot of research. In your case, no research.
My games are gold. Solid gold, baby.
Typically, the game master's assumed to be the authority on the rules. In your case, they're making rules. You go.
Good Lord, rules.
Roll 2d6. What am I rolling for? Just do it.
You people and your rule crutches.
But the point is that in most normal functional gaming groups, the game master just carries a whole lot of burden. Why would somebody even want to be a game master?
I can only give you my take on why I want to be a game master. Initially, back when you and I, Dan, played in high school and such, I never was a game master, didn't want to be a game master. You were the game master. All I wanted to do was play, and that was fine. Then we went away. We were separated for a long time. And I started
still working over who gets the house and the kids
indeed.
And all that.
Yeah, I guess who got the Battletech stuff and guess who had to buy it off eBay. I started my own gaming group. The vast majority of the players never gamed before, ever. So I was the one sitting there who had the most amount of experience. I had to be the game master. So I had to develop my own style and stuff. And then from that, I really enjoyed it. Then other guys started becoming game masters and such. And the problem I had was I was sitting there, and I guess it was a control thing. You know, every player, when they're playing, even if it's a good game, has certain bitches with the game.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's just human nature. That's any activity you do. And I would just sit there, and I guess it was like an ego thing, because I'd sit there, and it's like, man, I could do that so much better. Or, man, I, you know, he did it this way, I would do it this way.
This is why GMing for you is the worst experience on the planet. Tossing that out there.
Worst experience for who? For me or for you?
Oh, no, for the game master. I'm not talking for me. I'm just talking in general. We'll get there.
You know,
we'll get there.
I got to agree with Chad that part of what sets that up is you've got to be one part control freak.
Yeah.
Yes.
You cannot stand substandard gaming, whether the game is in reality substandard
or it's
completely in your mind imagination, doesn't matter. You really want to be in control and to do it right.
Yeah, and you know, actually racking my brain here, I think there's a lot of prettier ways I could put this. I think it also does take a person who's very creative. Mm-hmm. It takes a person who likes the
who's handsome, charismatic, brilliant men. If only I could get a picture of Adam's face when I was saying that. It's priceless.
I gotta go. I'm doing this.
But I think also part of what I personally get out of game mastering, in addition to just the creativity and such, is also I like the reaction from people. There's a part of me where when there's a great game, I get so much enjoyment out of seeing what people will do with the world. Mm-hmm. Watching people have a good time with the things that I created.
I
think there's a real emotional payoff there.
I love people who get really excited about my games, who really get into it, like I engage them. I love pissing people off to no end with, you know, nefarious bad guys or something to where they're turning their faces. I'm like, I can't believe this guy did that.
We're talking about GMing.
Yeah. Oh, well, that too. And, you know, I love it when people just exhibit some kind of emotional response other than just sitting there going, yeah, that was a good game.
So what you're saying, in short, is you like pressing people's buttons?
Yes.
You know what, though? And I'm sitting here, and this is a really, really cynical take on things. Mm-hmm. But when you think about it, you like telling a story. Control freak.
Yeah.
You like getting a reaction out of people. Control freak. You could almost boil all these down. I know we're going to get some comments on that one. It's oversimplification or whatever. But
well, I'll take this from a different angle.
Yeah.
Why I fail as a GM is because I have none of these things.
Mm.
The main reason that I've GM'd in the past is, well, this game ended. Now someone else needs to GM. Oh, it's my turn. I have no one of these like alternate motivations for these kind of things.
Adam, we have over here on the big board a list of about eight different reasons a game master can suck. And we don't know which one to start on. So do you want to pick for you? Why do you think you struggle so much as a GM? How do your games tend to turn out?
Ooh.
You don't have to bash yourself. If you could just give us even a reason, like you just don't have enough experience.
You know, I will say about Adam's games, too, is that he creates an interesting game. Like, in his mind, he plans it out. It's interesting. It's good. But when he goes to run it, you're not the type of person to care what people think about your stuff.
That's an unfortunate side of my apathy.
It's like...
Let's start, then, with number five up there. Poor campaign planning / games that fizzle out.
Actually, I think number five was the big descriptor of my gaming style. That's why I made it up there.
No, actually, that wasn't a description of you. I won't name the person's name because they have been involved in the podcast. But
oh my.
Goddamn, Molina.
There's a person that I have played under a couple times, and he actually runs a pretty good game. His games are actually pretty interesting. But the problem that he has is when he sits down, he comes up with a handful of great ideas, and when we actually go to play them, either things just don't work out at all the way he had thought, or, and this is the more frequent one, we have one or two really great, really intense games, and then he's done. He's out. And this campaign was supposed to go for weeks or months or whatever, and these things just fizzle out. And, you know, I want to sit here and give some kind of big do and don't on what fixes that, but I really think a lot of that is just experience.
Yeah.
That it'd be like if you're going to cook a big meal for a family of eight or something, which is a big family, but let's just say, well, the fact is nobody knows better than the chief cook of that household, be it mom or dad, how much food that takes.
Right.
Because you can sit there and read, well, serving size is this, and well, you've got teenagers, so that. But the fact is you just kind of learn to feel out that, well, if I make this, so-and-so's not going to eat that much of it, and this person's going to have a triple portion. And
damn, Adam.
Cooking for chicken.
But, you know, that's kind of what I see it as. I think when he writes the campaigns, maybe two things happen. The lesser is that I think he underestimates the task. He doesn't plan enough material. But I think the bigger one is he's just not really sure how we're going to handle it and how long it's going to take to play out.
Right.
I think my biggest problem is I have really only ever gamed under Chad, and I tried Chad's style of game.
No, you're not that personality type.
No, you're right. That's absolutely right. I am not spontaneous, on the fly, creative enough. I'm really not creative enough in general to do it, but especially not spontaneously. Oh, no.
Hmm.
That's why I think the biggest delimiter of my game is
I'll be curious to hear you come back and talk about that again. For several podcasts, we've talked about how we're starting this game or that game, and they keep starting and stopping. But if our current campaign actually does get off the ground, I'll be curious to hear you come back and talk about whether you think the kind of GMing that I do would be easier for you to do.
Yeah.
Well, we've already had long conversations about how it would be.
Right. Because Dan and I's styles are
totally different.
Opposites.
Just your personalities are also in that kind of 90-degree tilt to each other, so...
Mm-hmm.
And my personality is much more akin to Dan's.
Right. You guys are programmers. I don't get that.
I just get the paycheck.
Yeah.
Don, doesn't have to be about you, but let's just work way around the room. Seven left up there. Pick a reason GMs can suck.
Let's do bad itemization.
Bad itemization. Reason number six.
Flying boots. And I'm looking at Don... Then I'm looking at Adam. I'm looking back at Dawn.
Listen,
the
boots have wings on them.
He had to have the boots.
Let's talk about this from two angles. A couple angles, maybe. I got two off the top of my head, but maybe as we talk about this will develop into a bunch more. I have gamed under game masters, myself included, who did not, when they gave out an item, think through just how either powerful or annoying this item was going to be in the hands of a single person. For example, I will not give out ever items of teleportation or invisibility, because I have been irritated so bad with both of them.
There's just no discussion involved. It's just three other people around the mic nodding their heads. Yeah, I can see how those items would suck.
What happened with these flying boots?
Well, actually, the game died about the same time I gave them to him.
So. Yeah, they killed the game. Pretty much what it was, it was time to give out a couple of magic items, and Dawn was running the game, and Adam was like, oh my god, I see these boots, because he's looking through the
I tried to divert him from these boots, you know, the sort of things, you know,
it wasn't that
the plot.
Oh no, I got the
like
ninja
that.
Eye on those boots.
And,
now.
You know, it wasn't that they could fly, it was that the boots had wings, and they could fly.
He wanted a helmet that had wings on it, too.
Let me teach you something about life. No matter how many puppies I get her, Carla will eventually always go back to wanting a baby. And the same law is at work in a role-playing game.
Very true.
But no matter how many flaming spears you give him, he is always going to want his winged boots.
Yes.
Speaking of which, I need a pair for the new Battletech game.
Yeah, fortunately there are none. There's a Hermes mech. That's as close as you get.
Stick.
Let's talk about from the other angle now. I have played in games where, and I realize this is normally almost an extreme that people may think we wouldn't even espouse, but I have seen it. They've under-itemized. Chad, do you recall our Ravenloft games where everything required a +1 or +2 weapon to be hit?
Yeah.
And the Game Master would not give us a single freaking magical item.
Yeah. Everything we had was the basic steel broadsword or whatever, and a counter come to us. Not even like we would do something stupid.
Yeah,
and
not
we would
like,
go where the more powerful stuff is. No, he would have ghosts attack us. You have to have a +1 minimum weapon to attack the ghost. You couldn't attack the ghost.
And so straight through.
Yeah.
This battle would go for 30 rounds as we waited for somebody to finally work through his catalog of magic missiles and kill them all.
Yep.
But I think you can itemize people to the point that they cannot effectively compete in the game you're putting them up against.
Mm-hmm.
Chad, it's your turn. Two down.
Combative GMs.
Combative GMs. Combative and overly competitive GMs. This is a huge, huge beef of mine as well. But Chad, why don't you go ahead and introduce it?
I think what a combative GM is, and this is a little bit more of a broader topic than the other GM styles or lack of styles that we've talked about before. Combative GMs is where it's the GM versus the players. The GM is not just setting up challenges for the players to overcome or weaving a story that the players are an active part of. It's more, you see this with a lot of power
to
gamers.
Get them.
Yeah. What is the highest level challenge that I can put these characters up against that isn't totally outrageously fair? Like, okay, all my players are level 13. I'm only going to allow myself 13 hit dice monsters or level 13 monsters or whatever for your gaming system. And I am going to try and kill these guys.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Three words.
Everybody
there.
Rolls up backup characters, too.
This is, in my opinion, almost an attitude problem. And I don't mean that in like the...
The worst kind of power game.
Well, it seems
like
the GM is trying to win.
Well, exactly. Yeah. That when you sit down as a game master, your job is to create a world and a plot to enable a game to occur for the enjoyment of everyone there.
Right.
It is not a contest. You're the GM. You will win. Okay?
Yeah.
It's that simple.
Your character just had a heart attack. Roll up a new one.
Yeah.
Congratulations, you've won.
Yeah.
Right. And I have seen this a lot. The game master is just out to get the players.
Right.
And maybe they're not even just out to get them, but sometimes it's a matter of, well, they want things to go a certain way. I remember there was a game I was playing in many years ago. And actually, this kind of digs into number 7 on the list, so maybe we should kind of combine these, which is when they love their enemies too much. And that's also a bad one. And this guy had a favorite bad guy, and by his own admission, I killed him.
Mm-hmm.
I did what it took to exterminate this guy, but he did not want my character to kill his NPC. Mm-hmm. So he just kept giving him infinite hit points and letting him do this and letting him do that. And that's the wrong attitude to have.
Yeah.
Unless you're playing Paranoia or Call of Cthulhu.
Yeah.
Well, it's even the wrong attitude to have.
I agree with Adam. I think it's still, like I said, I mean, if the game master set out to just block the characters or defeat them, they win. Why bother doing it?
Right. Well, it's almost guaranteed you're either going to go insane or die during Call of Cthulhu if you're playing it right.
Well, I mean, with like Call of Cthulhu, it's a little different because the game is supposed to be dark and tragic. That you're not necessarily supposed to have a happy ending where, right. where the elder gods come back, it's doomsday, you defeat them, everybody's happy, and we go to the pub. No, it's
you're never going
to
beat Cthulhu.
Yeah, you know,
it's just not happening.
It's like you sacrifice everything to get the elder gods to go back to sleep or go back to their dimension. You barely save the world. Half the party's dead, and you are barely holding on to the last shreds of your humanity. Game over. And it's just like, and that's what the Cthulhu is supposed to be like, and it's supposed to be real dark and sinister and tragic like that. I think you could play Call of Cthulhu where it's not the game master versus the players. You can still have it be tragic and people die and right. all that. As long as the players and the game master are working together to yeah. weave this story, and the players know it's going to be tragic and the game master knows it, and they're both going in there together communicating OOC-ly about what's going to happen to who or maybe and that sort of thing.
Sometimes it's kind of painful, though, because it's like, because you're GMing this game and it's like, you know they're going to die if they go in there, and you can't stop them from going in there. But they go in there anyway.
Well, see, that's different, though. That's radically different than something like I played in a game once where we were fighting these Dark Elves, I think. It's mm-hmm. years ago. I don't even remember. And the guy that was GMing it would have things happen like, you know, we shoot something at these guys, an arrow or a spell or whatever, and would roll extremely well. I mean, mm-hmm. should have hit mm-hmm. these guys. And he's just like, nope. The armor class is so good, you miss them. And he's just, they're like smirking at us. And it's like, yeah, what the yeah. hell are we supposed to do? Mm-hmm. You know, or it's also like when the game masters intentionally frustrate the characters. Like, in his notes, it says, if you get to this door, the item they're after, the magic chalice, is behind this door. Yet you get there, and it's like, you got there quicker, easier than he thought you would. So it's mm-hmm. like, well, the door won't open.
Yeah.
Well, we bash it down. Well, you can't. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, so finally you dig through the wall around it after 3 hours of this. Well, it's not
there.
And
now your mining skill is plus 20.
Yeah. The chalice isn't there.
And there's a lot of cheesiness there. It's just, yeah. that doesn't seem to me a competitive GM. That sounds like
it's stupid.
Like a lazy GM, like, you know, I had 4 hours of material plan. You guys burned through 2 hours of it already.
So I'm just going to piss you off.
Yeah. So let's just stand around for 2 hours. And then at the end, maybe I'll give you what you want.
We kind of hit on it there a little bit, but let's go ahead and develop the one we said tied into this a little more. Number 7, loves his enemies too much. Mm-hmm. When you as a game master are running a game, the game is about the players, okay? Mm-hmm. It may be set in your world. It may involve your plot. It may involve your wonderful NPCs, but this is the story of the players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, hear that carefully. If you love your bad guys more than you love your players, such that you would sooner destroy the party than let them kill your favorite guy, Baron Von Badass, don't put him yeah. in the
I
game.
I love the Baron. It's time to be a player and not a GM and just play Baron Von Badass.
Right.
You know, and I think that gets into, like, something else where you get the tourist games, you know, where the GM just loves his characters so much that
he loves his characters and his settings so much.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
just like a tour of his.
But you're just supposed to sit there and be impressed.
Yeah, you go to the king's court and you watch the king and Baron Von Badass have this really deep, interesting exchange, and you just stand there and listen. And then the players, like the Baron Von Bass, is like, I'm going to go to the Dark Elf Citadel. And then you're like, okay, let's go to the Dark Elf Citadel. And then it's like you watch the Dark Elves do their thing.
We need a bonus topic up here. Topic number 9 on this list. I didn't even think about. There is a phrase that we invented several years ago. And this was based on a skit on In Living Color mm-hmm. where they had a spoof Richard Pryor movie called Richard Pryor Scared for No Reason.
Yeah.
And based on this, we invented a kind of game called the Richard Pryor game mm-hmm. where all you are supposed to do is run around powerless and scared.
Yeah.
That, for example, Baron Von Badass shows up. He's a complete jerk to you. He's evil. And he's like, well, you're going to go get this for me. I'm going to kill your family. And if at any point in this campaign, whether you're a starting character or the most powerful guy in the realm, mm-hmm. if you stand up to him, he will annihilate you in one wink.
Right.
And all you do is you spend the whole game running scared.
Yeah.
You can't fight anything. Every monster you encounter is beyond you in power level. Every trap you encounter is beyond you in power level. You can't possibly survive anywhere without being paranoid way beyond what's fun.
You can't interact with anybody important because everybody is important is like the lords and nobles of the land, and you're the lowest peasant nothing, and they won't even talk to you, and it's just like...
Why am I even here?
Yeah, yeah. The players are starting to be like, are starting to act like, well, what is the point? What is the point of all of this?
And now, admittedly, this was a very, very long time ago, but we played, Chad and I, you and I played in a Richard Pryor Ravenloft game where... And
the
this,
Mists of Ravenloft.
You miss John, don't you?
Yeah.
John used to do the little chant with you.
Yes, because he knew. He knew.
And you know, I don't say this to put anyone down because the guy actually ran some games later that I had a lot of fun in. But this was way back.
No, I'll put Ravenloft down. And not because Ravenloft is a bad setting. Ravenloft's actually a pretty interesting setting. I'm so traumatized by that game. Anytime anybody says Ravenloft, I'm like,
This is back when we were first starting out gaming and you really didn't know what we were doing.
Oh, exactly.
And Chad and I, when we sit down and play characters, have very strong personalities. He didn't know how to control us, and so the way he controlled us was by making us in Ravenloft level 1 or 2 characters, and everything we were going up against was like level 20-ish stuff, but we had handlers, NPC handlers, that would handle the fights for us. But what this guaranteed is that we would never move any faster, nor in any direction the plot didn't go,
right?
Because we would not survive anywhere this NPC handler was not going.
Man, this sounds awful.
Yeah, well, and anytime we just got frustrated and tried to, like, just, I walk. Where do you walk? I walk to the north. Why? Because right here is stupid, and I haven't been to the north, so I'm giving everybody here the bird, and I'm walking north.
I'm looking for less stupid.
Less stupid. And we would start walking north. We'd get about a few feet, and guess what would happen?
Encounter!
No, the Mists of Ravenloft would envelop us, and then...
Poof us back,
and then we'd be back in the Castle of Stupidity.
Man, that sounds awful.
Oh, you have no idea.
Well, like I said, I don't say... I mean, we've all run bad games.
Yes.
All of us have run bad games.
Yeah, and you know, like you said, this was when we were teenagers in high school. I'm sure our characters were awful, and his game was awful.
Absolutely.
Exactly. I admit that.
It was awful all the way around.
Yeah. Going north for lack of stupidity, you wouldn't have found any. It was stupid all over. All the cardinal points of stupidity.
Directionless stupidity, as far as the eye can see.
All right, it's my turn, so I'm going to pick number one.
Oh, I was going to do number one.
I bet you. Pointless GMing. Have you ever played in a game where it seemed like there was no plot?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Adam, do you want to
get it on? You can start off.
It's called a Box Canyon.
Box Canyon.
A Box Canyon.
Behind us, there's a rock wall.
30 feet in the air.
Uh-huh.
Impassable.
Can't climb it. Can't throw a rope up there. Can't scale it.
Can't do anything to it.
To the right and left,
rock wall.
30 feet in the air. Can't throw a rope up there. Can't climb it. Can't scale it.
No sun.
You're in a Box Canyon. You can go one direction. 30 feet in front of you. Bad guys.
Well, now, wait a minute.
We played this campaign.
Wait a minute. I would actually take this down to number 3, which is boring and uncreative games.
Oh, but it changes up. Eventually, you come to the end of the Box Canyon.
There's a cave.
Yes.
No, I'd still put this. I have played in games where there was nothing going on.
This is this game.
No.
There's nothing going on.
There's enemies to fight. There's something going on. I don't think you hear me. There was nothing going on. There was, like, this murder. We investigate this murder. I mean, we did everything. We examined the body, examined the rooms. I mean, we just shook this thing upside down. There was nothing to find. We went out into the main...
There was no murderer. There wasn't even a body.
We went out into the main area, tried to talk to people. Nobody had anything interesting to say. So we start calling our contacts. None of them knew anything. Kept on going and going. Finally, we just gave up, and it's like, our characters go to bed.
Yeah.
Because there was nothing happening.
I would tell the GM, it's like, well, what do? I get a newspaper. Oh, okay. Well, what do? I flip to the want ads. Yeah? And I look for a job.
Clearly, detective work is not paying off for me.
Probably something secretarial. Let's try that for interest.
Whole game. It's just like, you just wanted to rip your head off and throw it at him. It's like,
wow. How Sleepy Hollow. only you know, if more I had, gore.
If I had a flaming jack-o'-lantern head I could throw at people, I would on a regular basis.
What? No salt on my fries.
Wow.
I would even paint Ichabod in blood over all of my doors.
Do you get the head back?
It'd have to be like a boomerang head.
The head like hits somebody, sets them on fire, and then comes back?
Well, it has to be like the Legend of Zelda boomerang, that no matter what it does, it comes back.
But yeah, yeah. No, like even if you're trying to run from it,
that'd be kind of stupid, though. You would lose a lot of your intimidation factor. I guess you looking for your head.
I would think so.
I guess you go down to Schnucks and get a new one.
Yeah, that's true, too.
Well, what do you use
although
to make it
flaming? Although there is a pumpkin shortage this year, so you're probably going to get a plastic one.
Is there really?
Yeah. Ooh.
Could you use a plastic one?
Yeah, people like all the
how could you
the,
light it on fire?
Pumpkin patches are having to melt buy plastic from other places.
Use a weapon.
This year was so wet.
Weapon.
Okay, well, we're now descending into pointless podcasting.
No, we're not.
So pointless GMing. No, when I say pointless, I don't mean number three, boring and uncreative. I mean there was literally pointless. There was nothing going on, and that no matter how hard you squeeze, there was no blood in the stone. Mm-hmm. And
see, I can't run a game like that, not because I'm like some great GM, but because I'm not getting any reaction out of my players.
Yeah,
I love poking my players, pissing them off, making them excited, getting them happy, getting them sad, getting them tense.
It's that social, I hate to use buzzwords, but that social synergy, that kind of group energy you get going. And for me, if there's nothing happening...
Yeah,
I mean, it stabs me harder than it stabs the players because, like, I realize that, you know, this game is failing. They're getting nothing out of it. I'm getting nothing out of it. So I've never understood that, why somebody comes not with no plot notes, but with no plot.
What would you suggest for a player to do? Like a player, so one of our listeners is in a game like that right now. Should you try and stop the game and talk to the GM, or should you, as a player, try to do things ICily to make the game interesting?
Yeah, I would not recommend that because usually that just gets disruptive. Mm-hmm. In that particular game, well, I don't want to get into the story too much, but we had someone who was not at this table who tried to make that game interesting by making his own action and ended up just kind of being a disruptive jackass that really made things worse, not
better.
How do
you disrupt nothing, though?
I don't want to see this getting better.
I don't want to turn this into Fear the Philosophy, but...
Trust me, it's quite possible. I'll tell you the story later. I don't want to tell it on recording, but...
Oh, now everybody's going to want to hear it.
I know, everyone
is. You might
as
well just say it, because everybody in the world wants to hear it now.
Can't we just do this on the forum?
Yeah, well, okay, this stuff somewhere else. What I would recommend, and I think this is a social thing, it depends on the person who's game mastering. Mm-hmm. I mean, in an ideal world, you could sit down with a guy and say, look, I mean, we're enjoying your game, but I just feel like there's not enough going on here. Is there a plot we're missing? If not, could you add a little bit more?
But could you add a plot?
Could you add a plot, for example? But it depends on the person.
Maybe you should listen to Fear the Boot. They got some great ideas.
They'll insult you in the third person.
Excellent.
But it depends on the person, because some people may not take that well.
Right.
You know, they may be really sensitive or whatever and may not take that well. And unfortunately, the way we've handled this in the past, and this is not...
Mocking and taunting.
Oh, no.
Here we are.
Passive-aggressive maneuvering.
Mocking and taunting.
You do things like you skip the next two or three games until it dies. You're like, hey, wouldn't it be great to play this?
Let's go bowling tonight.
Yeah, I've used
beer,
that tactic.
A great motivator against games.
So I don't know that I have any helpful suggestions, because it really depends on the person, whether you can approach them or not, and how approachable they are. But
just be insidious about it. Just mention another game to one other player. And then get them thinking about it.
Really cool.
It spreads like wildfire.
Yeah, but what happens if you're in a group where they only have one GM? One guy is the GM, and he's always the GM.
See, that was our group. They're probably going to have to do the same thing we do. Go through like three or four failings, and then back to the first GM.
Yeah, that's true. Well, in our group, like I said, I was the primary GM. And so if they didn't like it, tough.
They stopped gaming.
But you know what? I did... The thing is, as a GM, and I think from the GM perspective, this is really important, is the post-game concept. What a post-game is that you have the game, you run it, and then at the end it's like you said, okay, that's it for tonight, that's great, okay, everybody, let's go to Waffle House. Eat Right is one of our local diners, drive around, do whatever, sit in there. What we did a lot, too, is we just sat in the living room, and I was like, okay, guys, tell me what you thought of the game. be brutally honest.
You know, and sometimes you can even frame it a little better and mm-hmm. say to them, what is it you guys would like to see out of this yeah. game?
Because, yeah, I did that a lot, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, that gives the people the opportunity to couch this in a positive way.
Right.
That they don't have to say, you know, your game's pointless. They can split it in the positive phrase of, you know, we'd like to see more action. You know, mm-hmm. we'd like to see more excitement, yeah. or we're not clear where to go, and we'd like a little bit more help in finding direction.
And
or,
it, that how you approach it depends on your game master, too. I mean, because on one hand, you might have a game master who, if you just say, dude, your game blew, you need to put in more action or plot, they might be really sensitive to that. You might have a game master right. who it's like, if you beat around the bush and you're really political, and it's like, well, it was a good game and this, that, and the other. The only thing they heard is a good game. I'll keep running with it.
Right.
You know, and that's why, and I think that I am more of the type of person who if my group beat around the bush, I wouldn't get it. So I directly ask them, tell me the things that you liked about my game. Tell me the things that you didn't like about my game. And I went around to each person. A lot of times. And I was like, Adam, what'd you like? What did
you know
think?
Another good way to break somebody out of running a pointless game is
just to break them.
Traumatize them. Traumatize them.
I was right!
Yes. Make them watch Interview with a Vampire.
Ooh.
Did you just say that?
I
thought you were Christian. That's not
it's
very
cruel.
Nice.
It's cruel. I know. But it would work.
Yowza.
All right, let's move on to the one you guys hit on, and I'll grab this one before we let Adam pick one. Not there's many left.
Isn't there only one left?
No, there's a couple. Number three, boring, uncreative games.
Yeah, I'm guilty right over here.
This is not a pointless game. This is a game where, like you said, your Box Canyon
box
game.
Well, let's explain the rest of the Box Canyon concept.
No, I think that was it, wasn't it?
No. Remember, you get to the beach, then the cave, then the castle.
Yeah, there was a castle at the end of the cave, I remember.
But what's in the castle?
You know, this is almost the exact plot of the old Apple game, Wizard and the Princess.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, the boring and uncreative game, sometimes those can be a little fun. I mean, you get a big old steaming pile, and every once in a while inside that pile, the guy who's running the game, this game was going nowhere. But he invented the ultimate pleasuring tool, the tongue finger.
That's right. Wither ladies. There was a room full of skeletons and zombies, right? Okay. We came into. Oh, you're just like, okay, this doesn't sound exciting. Oh, no, this was great.
This was the most creative thing that he had in the game.
And then we're like, well, what do you, there's a whole bunch of undead in the room. Well, what do you mean undead? And he's like, you know, undead. Like what? Zombies, skeletons, that sort of thing. He's like, you know, there's like body parts crawling around. There's zombies, you know, and there's body parts attached to other body parts. And then, now mind you, we have a gaming group of majority females. And he's like, and there's like a tongue with a finger attached to it. And all the ladies are like, really? Wow.
That was the only memorable thing about that game.
It was awesome.
Thank God it died afterwards.
Yeah, oh, no, shortly thereafter.
The game died. The tongue finger lives.
I played a game under a guy once, and this one I can say pretty openly is I don't think this guy listens to this podcast. But we sat down, got ready for our first game, and all he did was clear his throat, pull out the monster's manual, and open to a random page.
Ooh.
Like, no joke. No joke at all.
Yeah. I mean, he didn't even start at the beginning?
No. No. This was not even an Eric Croker at a zombie run.
Man.
The legendary run. Did he even say, okay, you guys are standing in a cave, and the cave has a room, and
I
in that
recall.
Room is flip, 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 an aardvark.
When someone's game notes are hardbound with a picture of a beholder on the cover...
That's called genius.
Your memory ends right there. You just eventually become detached and feel like you're floating above your body. And
several days later, you come out of the coma and your dice hand hurts.
Suddenly, you come out of the coma, your dice hand hurts, you're not wearing pants, and you're in a gutter in Tijuana.
And you spend the next hour and a half just walking it off, walking it off, walking it off.
All right, let's move on to the next one.
You know, something else occurred to me. You can have a game master who may not be boring and uncreative. They just may not be very good communicators.
What are you saying?
So it comes off as boring and uncreative.
Yeah, you know, I'm the host of a podcast.
No, I agree with you. I have seen that. I've seen multiple game masters.
I know that was a problem for me when I started out.
The game is a hunt. If you could get in their head if they could plug their brain into a holographic projector, this would be the most interesting game you have ever played in.
Well, it was like that with Dawn when we very first started out, and I'm going to talk about you for a second.
That's okay. I've already admitted my problem. Yeah.
She was very shy. She'd never game mastered before. She'd played in games before. And it was one of those things where it's like she had all the notes and she had all the drawings and all the maps and pictures of all the characters and the languages done out. And she was ready to roll and it was going to be the best game in the world. But she gets up there and she's like,
this is so horrible. I'm sorry. Fine.
You know what?
This is horrible.
You write me a game. I'll run it.
She's like, this is terrible. This is terrible. And we're like, no. You haven't started.
You haven't started yet.
Yes, it is terrible. We're on the game. We didn't do that.
All right, well,
yes, you did.
Whoa.
All right, well, Donna,
you my mic.
You brought this up, so why don't...
Hey, you know what? I'm sorry to interrupt, but go on a tangent here. Tangentize.
He's lying. He's not sorry to interrupt.
Don wrote a really good game. Adam said, you should write a game, and then I'll run it. Co-GMing. Like, one person is a bad communicator, but is really creative. One person is a good communicator, but horribly inept. Kind of fat and ugly.
What do you say? My goatee's pretty.
Your wife just tells you that because she loves you.
All right, it's time to move on.
Oh, hold on. Don, hang on. This was the one you brought up. So you kind of added a point number 10 to our list of eight, which is that Game Masters...
my tangent, though.
I weeded that garden.
Jesus.
Game Masters can't communicate for... What is your advice for people in that position?
I say stick it out. Keep running them until you get comfortable with it. If they really didn't want to be there, they wouldn't be there. Your gaming group.
Yeah, and I think the worst thing that's going to happen is 2-3 games in, they say, listen, your game sucks. We're not going to play it anymore. And then you're off the hook anyway.
Yeah, you're like, woo!
That's all over with, thank God.
Yeah, I've had 3 or 4 of those conversations.
It might develop into something really cool. You don't know. Yeah. You can't tell until you try.
Yeah, and I think this tends to come from people who don't talk enough in general.
I don't know who you're looking at right now.
People that need to talk more and read less. But
we're in the real world.
I think Dawn hit on something important there, which is the fact that game mastering is a social skill. Mm-hmm. And a social skill, like most other skills in life, can be developed with time and practice. And I have seen people where, their first game may be kind of sticky or bad, but if they're open to feedback, that over time their games get a whole lot better.
Right. Yeah.
Right. You know, speaking even for myself, I wouldn't claim to be the best GM in the world, but I think I run pretty good games. My first handful of games...
Oh, they suck.
My
God, they were awful.
Don't hold back now.
Oh, the maps.
Because, you don't...
The plots that drag, the... Oh, hey, Dan.
Oh, hey, yeah. And they were filled with such brilliant player characters.
Yeah, you are a gun owner. So,
yeah, I think let these people stick it out. Let them try it out. Because they can get better. All right, Adam, next topic. There's two left up there.
The next topic I'm going to pick is favoritism.
Favoritism. Ooh. Where the game master blatantly prefers one player or one play style over the others in his group.
Or goes to the opposite extreme, and I'm guilty of this, too.
Picking on somebody?
My wife plays a game. I don't want to be accused of favoritism. I'm too hard on my wife.
I have a different problem. I don't tend to be too hard on people as a counterbalance.
Mm-hmm.
If there's someone in the group who's annoying me, or their characters tend to be tiresome during the games...
Or they use loaded dice.
Or they cheat on the dice. Then I... We'll pick
I think
on that
punishment
first.
Is not favoritism or anti-favoritism.
You don't think punishment's
I think punishment is merited.
All right, it's the whole... We have a whole theory in our gaming group called the carrot and the stick.
Right.
And it usually applies to one person, but it can apply to others, where somebody's getting out of line. And you can do one of two things with it. You could either give them the stick, which is you just pound them, punish them in some way, or you give them a carrot. You know, it's the positive reward. You do this, you get a reward, and come over here, come back in line, and you kind of hold up this carrot for them and then give it to them. And I think that that's an important balance. That I don't think that GMs should just pound punishment out. I think that they should reward good behavior and then also tempt players from bad behavior to good behavior with rewards. But you can't go too far with either. Like, I had this conversation with John, because John... is a real hard line when he GMs.
Because yes, he is.
He came from a power gaming background, but he is by no means a power gamer anymore. But he did come from that background. And he has zero tolerance for shenanigans during his game. He, after one particularly brutal game, I had a conversation with him. I'm like, dude, too much stick? You need a little bit more carrot. And he's like, okay. And then next game it came around and there was a small percentage less stick and virtually no carrot.
Brilliant.
Movement.
That's why I love John G.
I think right. from speaking to myself, I have the character fall off. I lack patience.
Mm-hmm.
Big time.
Yeah, you do.
I know. And if someone in the game is annoying me,
mm-hmm.
it's like my instant reaction is stick.
Yeah.
It's like they can start one syllable and here comes the stick. And
hey, whack!
But I guess really when we put that topic over there, reverse favoritism isn't what we were getting at, though. It's probably equally bad.
It's funny when I'm in a game with you because it's just like it's the constant stick. It's like you're just constantly beating me with the stick to where that is the natural state of the game for me, and I just continue on with my merry way.
Yeah.
I'm thinking back, though. I don't have any relevant experience with favoritism, though.
I have seen some favoritism.
I think that the only
if you haven't been GMing long, you want to probably be more, gentle with your players because you don't want them to stop playing.
Yeah. The favoritism that I showed you, Adam, you might not have even noticed it. It was because we used to work together.
And, oh, yeah, we would talk about the game during...
Yeah, during our breaks and lunch and then our extra additional breaks that we took and Union Shop.
You did get away with a lot of crap.
And we would talk about his character and the relation of the game, and then he would, wheedle out of me secrets and stuff that I had in store. And doing that allowed him to develop his character a little bit more than anybody else in the group, and also allowed him to get more plot focus.
That's one I'm definitely guilty of, that there have mm-hmm. been a few games where one person in the group or two people in the group worked real close with me to develop their characters.
Right.
And so I worked all kinds of things into their background that became huge parts of the game
mm-hmm.
that didn't happen for anyone else because they may not have given me as much to work with or just didn't develop it with me.
Or they weren't able to or whatever.
Yeah.
And how that ended up, and because we talked about this happened in a game that you were running with me playing. You worked real close with this one guy because he had more access during that week or whatever, and I was really busy. And it was like the entire game was focused on him,
right?
And then I was just sitting there. And how do you deal with that? What advice would you give a GM?
Some of it is, I'd almost say, you because I wouldn't say reduce the involvement of that person,
right?
Because I think that's like saying
you should raise the other characters.
Yeah,
up to that
it's
level.
Like saying of your four kids, one got a well balanced meal, the other three are eating sawdust. Don't take away his meal and give him sawdust.
Daddy. Can I have more sawdust?
No, back to the mine.
So I think that the best thing you can do is sit down with those other people and say, look, I feel that so-and-so is really heavily involved. Give me something in your background. Give me a long-lost brother, or you don't know who did this, or your husband or wife disappeared. Give me something to work with so I can build you in better.
As a GM, all the stuff you have to do to be a GM, all the notes, all the preparation and stuff, you have to do a little bit more still. You have to get in contact with all your characters and make sure that they are all involved.
I'd say I also tend to personally be guilty of a personality favoritism. The table, the people who are the loudest and most colorful, I tend to pay the most attention to.
Yeah.
And that's not by design. That's not that I particularly have...
I think that that's how we came up. Because
we did, very much.
Because, we came from
rabid dog gaming.
Yeah.
Someone throws one bone on the table and every dog dies.
Yeah. Well, and it's kind of like our gaming styles were how we used to eat in high school, where somebody put a pizza on the table and opened it up, and you have six or seven very hungry teenagers dive for it. The guy who walks across the room, gets the napkin, gets the plate, gets a fork, and walks back to the pizza.
Eats sawdust.
Yeah, he gets an empty box with grease on the bottom
of it. Well, and we did.
That's how we gamed.
In our first game, we were all very high-energy teenagers,
mm-hmm.
and initiative was almost a matter of volume.
Yes.
That he who rolled the highest decibels went first. And we still carry that to this day. We're in a gaming group. And I could take a gaming group of, let's say, like Chad
mm-hmm.
and Mike and Dawn, for example, Mike and Dawn will get one action for every 10 of Chad's.
You know, that changes, though. When you run a game for a majority female players, that changes. I don't want to really get into the whole men and women are different.
Well, let's just say, let's put it this way, but these girls were this way.
These girls were this way, yeah. These weren't... I think it's a combination of two things. These girls weren't like this, and this was all their first game.
So you have to spoon-feed them a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. And nobody was standing up, and Adam was a guy there, and Adam and John were not the type of guys to stand up and start shaking their fist and yelling that they want to punch the guy in the face first.
Brilliant.
Yeah, oh, my God, you do. We just basically, you know, went around the room. Everybody took their turn.
Right.
But, and then you had me as a GM who is like that. I'm standing up, I'm shaking my fist, trying to draw the role-playing out of each person.
When you said that you got this fist in the air like you're trying to summon it forth. Now.
Yeah, I imagine me pulling the role playing out of you, Adam. Name your goddamn character. Good name.
Better than Adam.
Yes.
Adam's a fine name. First man.
Yeah.
All
anyway.
Right. Our last topic up there on our list of eight, which became 10, is pressure prone GMs. And I guess there is the reverse of this, which is GMs that don't listen to feedback at all because either they're too hard-headed or too sensitive. Mm-hmm. But that's a person-to-person issue.
Mm-hmm.
But pressure-prone GMs. Chad, this one...
Let me give you an example of what that is. That's us in high school with this one guy playing Battletech, and he looks at you and he's like, I want a Banshee. No. 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 Now stretch that on for the next 20 minutes. We're all making characters and eating and doing normal high school gamer things. And the only thing out of this guy's mouth was, I want a Banshee. And Banshee is a type of really powerful mech. And Dan, talking to everyone else, making characters, every time this was asked, no, no, no. 20 minutes later, the no's turned into no, no, no. Yes! Damn it!
You know, have you ever seen this on a greater extreme than that? Not somebody who's nag-prone, but someone where it's really like they're playing through and someone's like, well, your guy can't beat this monster. Well, but I really should. I'm a big, powerful this, that, and the other. Da, 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 da. Okay, fine. You killed him. I mean, just
I don't
like
want,
that.
I don't want to admit that I do that. I will sit here on this mic and say, no, I do not do that. And I imagine John... reaching across space and time through this podcast.
I could see the hand coming
through
the mic.
Shaking his fist, just ready to gush out onto this rant about how that's not true. So I guess I have to say, yes, I do that. Basically, it involved like Phil and Phil's deaths,
mm-hmm.
because Phil, of our party, of our group of quiet players, you had Phil, who came from a power gaming background, was a rambunctious player, always had the harebrained wild schemes and would get bored easily. Bored right off a cliff, right into a group of bad guys, right on the hand grenade, right on blowing himself up. And then he really made interesting characters, though. And that was my problem, is that I liked his characters so much, I heavily incorporated them into the plot.
Right.
You couldn't let him go.
Couldn't let him go.
It's
I couldn't die.
Hard...
Then he got that look in his eyes, that puppy dog face.
I was like, I needed a 20 to live. And I only rolled an 18.
I'm sorry, Phil. You could live.
It's
have
hard,
life,
though, because
child.
The fundamental reason you role-play, and we've said this 100,000 times over, is to have fun.
Yeah.
When you come to the table, ideally, you know, birds of a feather and all that, you want similar things out of the game. But it's highly unlikely that every single person there wants the exact same things and will have the exact same ways of getting it.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you are left with, I guess, some reason that you kind of have to every so often give in to things you really shouldn't give in to.
Yeah.
Because,
oh, yeah.
I mean,
yes.
When people play games for different reasons, mm-hmm. and when Phil comes to the game, he came there for those moments when he could drive a tank through a hospital.
Yes. Yes,
yes
he did.
Yes, he does.
And to me, John and I always discuss this as that's the carrot and the stick. Phil sits there, waits as patiently as he can while we all do our role-playing, while we all develop our characters and hold hands and have feelings and come up with a plan for that moment when I let him and I give him the carrot to drive the tank through the hospital.
I guess another way of putting this is that gaming, you can't think of it as a path.
Mm-hmm.
You have where there's one way to accomplish everything, there's one way to succeed, there's one method the game master will encourage. You've got a lot of people there, and so you have to think of this like a 12-lane interstate. That here's a puzzle, here's a problem, And there may be many, many acceptable ways to go at this.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to allow that. It's your job as the game master to juggle. As I said before, you are the enabler for this game and their enjoyment. You
right.
make this possible.
Right.
If this was a basketball game, you are Spalding. You are making this enjoyment possible. So you've got to offer kind of some amount of...
Yeah. Of give.
Yeah, give to what it is yeah. they want to get out of this.
Well, and there's a difference between give and pandering.
Right.
And it's a fine line. And again, it's all about balance. It's all about balancing each of these different things, you know. Carrot and a stick. Too much carrot, too much stick is a bad thing. Too much give, too much take is a bad thing.
And I guess if you got someone in your group that can't even come close to that balance,
mm-hmm.
you know, game mastering is really like anything else.
Well, players got to give a little too.
Right. Well, I was going to say even something harsher than that. And that is true, mm-hmm. but that's not what probably a whole other topic for a whole other podcast. But I was going to say that, you know, you may just have to come to the realization that somebody's just not cut out for game mastering.
Yeah.
That if their personality just fails miserably at one of these points beyond the point where practice would fix it,
mm-hmm.
that, you know.
But you know what?
And I don't think there's many people like that.
No.
I really don't.
No.
I think most of the people that think they're not good GMs, in truth, with enough practice and with enough personal mm-hmm. internal self-coaching, could become better.
Right.
But
yeah. Enough constructive criticism and such. And enough taunting, enough jeering.
Passive-aggressive.
I respond better to taunting and jeering yeah. than I do constructive criticism.
Right. The important thing is to be passive-aggressive and fully immature.
Yes. And I think that anybody could be a pretty decent GM. I think that some people just really, really want to.
Some people are just really, really lazy.
But you know what?
Want to.
I think that...
You know, I see you looking at me.
I think that everyone should be a GM. And I say this because as a GM, it's an incredibly large amount of work. And as we've all talked on the podcast, my style of GMing is the least amount of work. It's the most amount of dancing, but it's the least amount of work, whereas Dan's style is the opposite. But players need to understand how much heart and right. effort that a game master puts into it. So when a player plays, instead of just running their player through and trying to get all the advantages or just trying to do this and that and the other, they look at the GM and they start saying things like, huh, how can I help the plot?
And I have been there. I mean, yeah. as someone who is primarily GM'd, I've GM'd far more games than I've played. There are times where I can tell just intuitively
mm-hmm.
what the game master is going through, and I won't do things to exacerbate that.
Yeah.
I guess it's kind of like the old thing.
Players become more forgiving, too.
Yeah, I mean, have you ever the old thing, like, everyone should have to work in a restaurant at least once?
Yes.
Because
yes.
that way, yeah. you probably won't be as big of a jackass to your waiter or waitress, because mm-hmm. you've been there. I have to say this, but I personally have never worked in a restaurant. But I think the same thing is true of game mastering,
yeah.
that you gain a new appreciation for that angle of the game. I went through actually kind of some grief with my previous gaming group, I guess about a year or two ago, over this, where they would put an enormous, I was very, very busy, very tied up with a lot of things, but they would put this enormous amount of pressure on me to have a game mm-hmm. ready. You know, that they wanted a game, and not only did they want a game, they wanted the most detailed, epic, this, that, and the other out of the game. But it's like, I don't think you guys understand
yeah.
what it takes to produce this, not just once, but mm-hmm. every mm-hmm. single week. I mean, just boom, boom, boom. It's hard to do that. And I don't think they fully understood that.
See, that was neat about, like, having John there, because John had ran games, a couple of games before. And there would be times when I wouldn't focus much attention on him because I wasn't able to, or I dropped the ball or whatever. But there was a couple times when I looked over at him at the end of a game. I'm like, hey, dude, I'm sorry. I didn't get you your character in this game very much. And he's like, it's okay, babe. I've been there before. I know how it is. Yeah. It's like, God, John G.
That Johnny G. Gurin.
Yep. He points at me. He's like, a little sparkle in his teeth. And
if you guys haven't picked up, we're jonesing for little Johnny G.
Yep.
We've been talking about how much we miss him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We hope he's not listening. Because if he is, we'll hear about this when he gets back. Hey, babe, I've only been gone a month and a half.
Plenty of John to go around.
Spreading his love.
That's right.
All right, well, I think that's about it for our episode on bad game mastering. So we'll wrap it up here. You guys take care. We will catch you next time.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot. This show is copyright 2006, fully owned by its hosts. The games, movies, and other properties mentioned in this show are the property of their respective owners. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor, as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.